You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. Here with me in the studio is Tomas Alejo and Jennifer Laskin. We're going to be talking a little bit about the Brown Berets today, as well as Girl Space. So thanks for joining me.
I said thank you, Bradley, and I'd like to say hi to all the radio people out there, supporters of Free Radio Santa Cruz, and all those involved in the struggle for the improvement of our community, for liberation, and for justice.
Hey, Santa Cruz, this is Jen, and I just want to give a shout-out to all the chicas out there and to my mom who's sitting here in the studio with me behind locked doors.
All right, moms.
Hope.
All right, moms is joining us from New Jersey today.
Yeah.
So let's get into the history of the Brown Berets, Tomas.
History, well, we got to go back a little bit, back to the 1960s. During the civil rights era. During that time, of course, as we know, there was a lot of tensions in the community when it came to racism, you know, segregation in our school districts, police brutality, the war in Vietnam was going on. And so a lot of people were organizing at that time. We had some main activists such as Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, Cesar Chavez, Dolores Huerta, Fred Hampton, the SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the Black Panthers. So at this time, there was a mass movement of you know, people getting involved. And this was also true for the Chicano community. There was all those issues that were affecting everyone nationally and worldwide was also taking a stronghold in our communities, our Latino communities. So young people got together in our barrios and organized, you know, to educate themselves and to improve the conditions in our neighborhoods, and especially when it dealt with police harassment. This is one of the main issues why the Brown Berets got together. They started in 1967, and they were started by a group of students in the East LA Community College. They took on the name Young Chicanos for Community Action. And they were involved in creating a change to civic participation, going to school board meetings, city council meetings, and bringing their issues, you know, to them to see if they could make some changes. Of course, a lot of these tactics didn't work. So they had to try to work without the system, and they became more radical and copied the same type of foundations the Black Panthers were built on. They created their 13-point program, which called for liberation, better education, the release of political prisoners, etc. So they got together in 1967. There were young people trying to create changes in their community.
How widespread are the chapters across the U.S.?
Well, I'm going back again. During the 1960s, there was chapters throughout the nation. Yeah, chapters in Arizona, in New Mexico, in all over California, and what they consider Aztlan, you know, the occupied territories of the Chicano community. So I would say there was about a good 20 chapters during the 1960s. And they were involved in a lot of issues. I'm going to just talk about a little bit of the things they were actually involved with during that time period. When they started, one of the issues that they organized first was against the police harassment. Like I said before, young people were getting incarcerated in mass numbers, and they were being harassed just, you know, because of the color of their skin, because of the type of clothes they wore. At that time, a lot of people were into the cholo and pachuco lifestyle, and so just because they wore baggy pants or the way they fixed their hair, they were targeted by the authorities, you know, by the police. And, you know, we have a tradition also of, you know, on the weekends we like taking our cars out, cruising around. It's always been a tradition in the Latino community. And so when young people would go out on the weekends in East Los Angeles on Whittier Boulevard to, you know, just have fun, cruise their cars around and socialize like young people do, they were getting harassed constantly by the police out there. You know, they would go out and round up young people, take away their cars. So that's one of the things that the Brown Berets did, was organize with car clubs. There would be like a security force out there in the community to make sure that the cops weren't beating up young people or arresting them for unfair reasons. So basically, they create their own community patrols or cop watches, as we like to say now. And then they also were involved also in trying to improve the conditions of the schools. They were addressing, you know, why wasn't there any teachers of color, you know, educating our young peoples in our neighborhoods, in our barrios, in our schools. So they brought some of these issues to light. There was segregation going on in the schools, and they fought against that. One of the main things that they organized in 1968 was what they called the school blowouts, where they got all the schools in East Los Angeles to walk out of their schools, including elementary school, high school, and stayed out for a good 2-week period of time. And during that, a lot of young people were arrested. 13 Brown Beret members were arrested, and they were held in jail for about a month, you know, until they were done with trial. And at the end, they were found innocent. You know, they couldn't find any charges on them, but they were you know, held there for a good period of time during that time. They also organized greatly against the Vietnam War. There were some of the people who organized what they called the Chicano Moratorium. That was as many young people don't. I mean, a lot of students of Chicano history really don't know about this, but they were actually one of the main organizers of the Chicano Moratorium during 1968. And the Chicano Moratorium was a group of young activists coming together to protest, you know, Chicanos being sent out to Vietnam and fight this unjust war on poor people out there in Vietnam. And so they organized a demonstration where they actually had 20,000 people attend. During that celebration or rally, I should say, the sheriff came in and disrupted this rally, arrested a lot of people. And during that process, 3 young people were killed, including 1 Brown Beret member and a newspaper reporter, Ruben Salazar, who was the director of KMEX Radio in East Los Angeles. This all happened in 1968. Brown Berets were also involved in starting their own breakfast programs, you know, and free clinics in the community. Something that the Black Panthers were you know, did in their communities as well. So the Brown Berets started all this for the people. And not only that, but also brought education, cultural education, to the community. So young people get a sense of pride and identity, you know, instead of being lost out there and getting just absorbed in this system. You know, the Brown Beret served as a tool to empower young people by teaching them this. In 1972, the Brown Berets were infiltrated, you know, by COINTELPRO. You know, FBI programs that actually broke up FBI and other organizations such as the American Indian Movement, collecting documentation on Martin Luther King. And so this same structure, the FBI, infiltrated the Brown Berets also and caused a lot of disruption within the organization in Los Angeles. A lot of key organizers were arrested, and some are still serving lengthy prison sentences to this day. A lot of infighting started happening at that time, and, you know, a lack of leadership. A lot of people became egocentric. You know, there was a lot of machismo involved in the organization at that time. So, you know, there was some negative parts of the organization. That's why some of the leadership fell apart. So in 1972, the Brown Berets stopped functioning as an organization. Our organization in Watsonville has existed since 1994. During that time, there was a lot of gang activity going on in Watsonville. Young people were getting killed almost twice a month. There was a killing in the state beach at a state beach, a young person by the name of Tony Valdivia. He was 16 years old. He was gunned down. And about a week later, there was a murder, execution style murder of a young girl. She was 9 years old, and she was killed along with her brother. He was 16 years old. Their name was Jessica and George Cortez. And so all this was happening in our community, along with the same issues that were going down in 1960. Police harassment, racism, segregation, all the stuff that was going down in the 1960s were still going down today and in 1994. So there was a group of young students who were, you know, exploring history, Chicano history and activism, and came across, you know, the history of the Brown Berets. And they questioned, why isn't an organization that was doing something back in 1960 doing something here today? Why isn't that model here for young people where they can learn, you know, their history, learn how to take part in their community, learn how to take back their community and confront these issues directly? So these young people said, you know what, we need to revive the Brown Berets again. And they did. You know, they got together, they resurrected, as I should say, the Brown Berets in 1994. And what they did was take everything that was positive of the Brown Berets and kept that, and everything that was negative, they just, you know, kind of put it to the side. And not only that, but they incorporated a lot of other things, you know, spirituality, indigenous spirituality, you know, the sense of equality of men and women. They try to keep their officers on a balanced level, where every officer position in their organization was going to be a male and a female together. So in 1994, they started this, and one of the first things they organized was against the gang violence that was happening in Watsonville. And they did this by putting together a march that they called the Peace and Unity March. And they brought the message of nonviolence into the neighborhoods, and they demanded a stop of the violence that was going on in our neighborhoods. So they marched with the families, the victims of these murdered young people. They marched with or other organizations. And they brought their spiritual ceremonies into these neighborhoods that were highly affected by gangs. And they conducted prayers and outreach, and they showed that they cared and loved the community. And they actually, you know, sparked something inside the young people in Watsonville. And they've kept this, you know, going on for the last 10 years. The Peace and Unity March goes on every September. But that was not the only way that we countered, you know, the gang violence. We went into the neighborhoods, and we're teaching young people their history, their culture, and how to empower themselves in the community, so they feel that, you know, they could take part and not feel like an outcast.
I'd like to learn about your involvement and when you got involved with the Brown Berets, but I think it would be nice to cut to a track right now.
Yeah, that'd be good. What do we have? A good. I think we're gonna start with. This is Fermin Mergoza. He's an activist from the Basque Country in Spain. These people are fighting for their liberation right now as we speak. And I met this gentleman at a recent reggae fest out in Humboldt County, the High Sierra Music Fest. So I was really impressed by their music. So let's go to the track right now.
Barra! A pesar de la persecución ideológica, a pesar de las difamaciones, a pesar de las agresiones fascistas, Fermín Ugruza contrabanda, representando por la calle. ¡Puños arriba, loco!
Catalunya, sigo sola.
Baja de ayuda es una, si te sigue un dos seis dura.
Mi comunicación sola.
Baja de ayuda es una, si te sigue un dos seis dura.
Mi comunicación sola.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org on the internet. And we're here with Tomas Lejo and Jen Laskin. Tomas, tell us a little bit about the history of the Brown Berets is organizing against Prop 187 and your involvement.
During Proposition 187, which I believe was in 1996 or 95, if I'm not mistaken, but that was a racist proposition proposed by conservatives here in California to stop funding for undocumented workers. They wanted to stop, and this is was not only for the workers. This was targeted actually at their children. The children could no longer receive any type of medical help, or they could not receive an education. And so a lot of people rallied against this proposition nationally, you know. And we here locally, we organize as well. And the way we did that during that time period was to organize a major walkout that was going to send a message to people in this authoritative positions, this government, and let them know that we're not okay with them attacking our communities, especially our children. And so we in at that time period walked out young people from schools, from Aptos High School, from Watsonville High School, and including the elementary school, junior colleges. It was really historical because at that particular time, we were able to march the students from Aptos High School, which left their school, and met with Watsonville students downtown Watsonville at the plaza. And they marched down to Highway 1, and we're going to close down Highway 1 and stop traffic for a period of time. Unfortunately, they were confronted by the Watsonville riot squad, and we weren't able to access the highway. But we stayed there confronting them for a good period of time. Tensions were really high. A lot of us were really concerned about, you know, a lot of kids' safety. So the whole demonstration was, yeah, definitely more symbolic. But we wanted to get a message out to the people in the community that we're going to do something about this and get the message out. During that time, a lot of us faced harassment afterward just for organizing this type of events. I'm going to share a little bit of my personal experience. About 2 weeks after organizing the walkouts, along with other students, the Watsonville Police Department's a narcotic squad actually confronted me at my house. You know, I was approaching the driveway of my house, the police department in undercover cars, you know, got me off my car with guns drawn at point blank range. Handcuffed me and actually went through, you know, my car and actually a trailer which I was staying in. Of course, they didn't find any evidence of anything. So what they did was actually plant evidence at that time. Inside my car, they said they found a syringe as well as a cooker, which is used to cooking heroin. Of course, I've never used heroin in my life. And I was trying to say, you know what, how did I get that? Was not even mine. And so I was arrested and... at the same time, I was fortunate because I had, you know, some backup by other activists in the community who had some, you know, ties with the district attorney. And the district attorney, after reviewing the case and seeing that the evidence that was brought by the Watsonville narcotics squad was really weak, they ended up dropping the case. But I just wanted to mention this, that this was repercussions against, you know, organizing this 187 event. And this is just a small example of what, you know, the police and FBI and other organizations as such do to activists or people who want to get their voices heard in the community.
So should we talk about what the Watsonville Brown Berets are working on right now?
Yeah, definitely. The Brown Berets have been involved in a lot of issues during the last 10 years. Some of the issues that they had been working on was trying to name our high school, our new high school in Watsonville, after one of our labor leaders who's been doing a lot throughout history for our people, especially fighting for farm workers' rights. The person is Cesar Chavez. We wanted to get the new high school named after him, and unfortunately, we were met by opposition. And most of the opposition came from the elite in our community. Much of these ranchers or growers who own a lot of property, and who actually, Cesar Chavez affected their pocketbooks during the 1960s when the UFW was organizing greatly in our community. And I say that he affected their pocketbooks because he was getting them better wages, getting them benefits, medical benefits, health benefits, demanding better working conditions in the fields, or even just trying to put a porta potty on the field so people can use a restroom out there instead of having to go to the bushes. All this cost these growers money. So, of course, they had a lot of animosity against Cesar Chavez, and that memory is still lingering on. So when a group of activists proposed of getting, or not only a group of activists, the community wanted the name of Cesar Chavez on their high school. So when we proposed it to the school board, we were met by opposition, and the school naming after Cesar Chavez was denied, and instead it was named Pajaro Valley High School, which translates to Bird Valley High School, instead of a great labor leader who did so much for our community. We did this in 2001, and right now we're organizing to try to name this an elementary school after Cesar Chavez. And we're still met with opposition by the same people who don't want the name even existing anywhere, you know, in our own communities. We're also organizing trying to get the school board to stop the segregation that's happening in our school district. In other words, they want a school secession. They want Aptos to remain in one district and Watsonville in another. This is modern-day segregation. We just recently celebrated the board versus Brown versus Board of Education last month, or about a month and a half ago. So, and it's kind of funny that, you know, this stuff that they fought for during that time period is still going on. This thing proposed by, you know, some of the elite in the community are trying to segregate. They kind of say that, you know, they want to gain control of their school district, and also that, you know, it's going to provide more funds. But this is all a fallacy. You know, there's been a lot of studies that the people of the poor community are actually going to be losing more funds, you know, and our schools are going to be more overcrowded because they're going to stop the busing of young people to Aptos School, which is going to further increase the classroom size at Watsonville. So this is one of the things that we're dealing with. We're also trying to organize different events throughout the community. Our upcoming event is the Peace and Unity March that we do in September. That's coming up. In February, we organize an event called the Youth Empower. We introduce young people to resources they're entitled to them in the community, and also how to get them involved in different organizations where they could, you know, do something and make positive changes for themselves and their community.
Right now, the Brown Berets, in alliance with the Youth Empowerment Project at the Resource Center for Nonviolence and in collaboration with KPFA, is putting on a hip-hop youth activism event. And we're really, really hyped up about this right now because we believe that hip-hop is a way to bring the politics, the music, the message, the history, the education, the power, the activism together in one place. And it's really an incredible tool to activate, empower, educate youth into doing something, and not just doing something because they feel like they have to, doing something that other people are doing, but it inspires creativity and a way for kids to do something in a way that really makes sense to them. So we plan to do an all-day conference. It's going to go from 1 in the afternoon to 11 at night. And the afternoon part will be workshop style. We've got commitments from Books Not Bars, from the Commemoration Committee of the Black Panther Party, from the Revolutionary Worker Communist Party, from KPFA, from Free Radio Santa Cruz and Santa Cruz Indie Media, along with the Triangle speakers. What we want is to present a forum where lots and lots of issues are covered so that people from all over the community, all ages, all different interests and background, can come and find something that speaks to them, which is why we're having a really large array of issues. The conference isn't just going to focus on one thing. It's going to focus on everything from like gay lesbian rights to immigration.
Tell us when and where.
September 4th at Cabrillo College. And then after the conference part, in the evening, there'll be a fundraiser hip-hop show. And we're working real hard on getting Immortal Technique to town. He's agreed to do it. He believes in what we're doing. He believes in bringing all these organizations together. If it's not Immortal Technique, it's going to be somebody just as badass. And that evening show will feature Akua Omosupe as a lead speaker and some pretty cool music. We'll have open mics running throughout the day. Oh, Youth Speaks is also doing a workshop, so we'll have open mics, and then the open mics will be beamed out through KPFA.
I don't know if you've listened to Immortal Technique's album line by line, but it's definitely sexist in a lot of ways, talking about, oh, that's not I, your mom's pussies, I, you know, stuff like that. That's not cool, and that's not really bringing folks together.
No, I think that Immortal Technique definitely has a lot of sexist lyrics and homophobic lyrics as well. But I also think that his message on the other end is extremely powerful. And I think the way he breaks stuff down at the political and at global levels is really important. And I, my plan is to pick him up at the airport or definitely spend some time with him if we get him and question him about his lyrics, because I just need to, because his other stuff is pretty powerful shit and pretty down, I just feel like he's got to have some kind of reason for the sexist lyrics, and I'm just not sure what those are. But I totally agree with you, and it's definitely a big issue with me. I skip over those songs when I listen to his CD. I know it's wimpy. But if anybody's into working on the event, we're having a meeting. The next organizing meeting is at the Resource Center for Nonviolence on Tuesday, July 20th at 6 p.m. And we're down for people that just want to help with food, with flyering, with whatever. So that's the hip-hop event. And yeah, we hope that just brings a lot of people together into the movement and to the Brown Berets.
I'd like to give some time to talk about Girl Space as well as open up for callers. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't think that we are necessarily done talking about the Berets either. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
I think the Girl Space is sort of a function of the Brown Berets and of my work with young girls in Watsonville. Girl Space is a new project that we started just this summer. It's an evolution of something that we started at Renaissance High School 2 years ago. 2 years ago, called the Girls Club. And the Girls Club was nothing more than a place for girls to meet with no guys around. And we had food and we just made our own fun. I found that young girls in Watsonville, and I think probably globally, and I saw it in Watsonville, really couldn't express themselves and be who they really were when there were teenage boys around. Because anytime they uttered a word, the guys were right there to make fun of the way their voice sounded or make fun of what they said or laugh and just take the tension immediately away from the girls. So the girls would just go back to reading their books or talking quietly or doing whatever seemed, you know, more interesting to them. So we started the Girls Club, and it picked up, and the girls... It's, you know, I don't know that the Girls Club, they did a couple really, you know, cool things. They took a trip to Utah. I mean, I don't know that they went out and they didn't take on anything political, right? They didn't do any huge campaign, but they provided a space for each other that was theirs, you know, that they owned. And that was really cool for them. It got hard doing it all at school. The girls were asking me to do, they wanted to go to New York, they wanted to do other stuff, and we decided to get a space out of school in the community. And Girl Space meets at 6 p.m. on Monday nights. They meet before the Brown Berets. I wanted to provide a place for girls to build skills, the same kind of skills that the Berets teach, but with female leadership. Also, we are going to organize a summer camp for little girls in the community and bring little girls into the fold. Ages, I think, 6 to 11 is what they decided. We're going to be selling tamales and dream catchers that the girls make to raise funds. We're raising funds for two of our girls to go to Art in Action Camp, which is a camp that Art and Revolution Global Exchange puts on every summer. So we definitely have some plans right now. And we're also looking for mentors to work with the girls one-on-one. What I've found is the way to work with these girls and be really successful is about building one-on-one relationships. And that's why I think I mean, I know that's where my success comes from, is just with working with the kids at a really personal level, not necessarily 24 hours a day, but just connecting with them in a way that they feel like, you know, they're important, that they matter, and that somebody cares about them. I would like to match my girls up with mentors in the community that can check in with them once a week, once every 2 weeks, that, you know, they can count on. And that's really, I believe it takes a village to raise a child, you know, and in this time in history, more than ever, it takes a village to raise a child, because there's so many influences out there. Just one person can never influence a kid enough, you know, solely, right? They need like a lot of different influences coming at them. So that's what Girl Space is about, and we're psyched about it.
That sounds great.
Yeah, Colin, if you're interested or you want to come down and volunteer, I really want to.
Let's give out that number.
Yeah.
In the studio, it's 831-427-3772. That's 831-427-FRSC.
There's always a lot of interest in Santa Cruz in the Watsonville Brown Berets, and people ask me that, you know, about the meetings and can they come to a meeting, but they're not Hispanic. You don't have to be Hispanic to be a Brown Beret or to work in Watsonville. It's really important now more than ever for allies to join these organizations and really be working like at the super local level on these issues, because this kind of politics and this kind of organizing activism is like bottom up, you know? And I think that the bottom up movement around the WTO organizing and all of these global movements are so much more effective than like working from the top down. As important as it is probably to vote in November, if that's your thing, I think that the real work and the real change is done right at this level that we're working with. And like, it's happening, you know, the movement is happening. It's been happening. So I really urge all the listeners out there in Santa Cruz to like ally yourself, get up, call us, and get involved, you know, because it's so, so happening all down in South County and Monterey County. And they really, 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 really need the support right now, because there's some crazy racist people out there.
Is there a number that people can call? Not on the air.
Yeah, they can call 429-1931.
Also, you can pick up our program right now on the internet at www.freakradio.org. If you want more information about the Brown Berets, you can also call Tomas at 465-6951. I think, Bradley, we're going to go up to the next track right now. This track is off a CD which has songs from the FMLN, the Farabundo Marti Liberation Organization, who fought for their independence in El Salvador. So this goes out to all the revolutionaries in El Salvador and all the revolutionaries out there in the community.
Dicen que dicen que vieron pasar a Farabundo Martí por Izalco, Huayúa y León, por Sonsonate y Quiché. Dicen que vieron pasar a Farabundo Martí por Izalco, Huayúa y León, por Sonsonate y Quiché. Por Nicaragua y El Salvador, por Guatemala pasó, con su luz de liberación Farabundo llegó. En 1893 nació Farabundo Martí, allá en Teotepeque, departamento de la libertad. Con la libertad por dentro creció en El Salvador, luchando por la justicia en el camino y de frente al sol. Fue en 1920, en dictadura de los Menéndez, que por su lucha solidaria fue expulsado de El Salvador. Guatemala fue su destino y algunos años allí vivió. Fue jornalero, albañil, maestro, sufrió con ellos la explotación. Fue militante centroamericano, propagandista y agitador. Organizó la lucha del pueblo y regresó a El Salvador. Sin que nadie lo imaginara, volvió a su tierra y se incorporó a los frentes trabajadores como cual organizador. Dicen que vieron pasar a Farabundo Martí por Izalco, Guayúa y León, por Sonsonate y Quiché, por Nicaragua y El Salvador, por Guatemala pasó, con su luz de liberación para Busto llegó. Escribió con esperanza y combatió con metralla. Su pueblo crecía con la mañana y Farabundo volvió. Organizó entonces su lucha y junto a él luchó. Una y mil veces fue encarcelado y fue expulsado una vez más. Dicen que pronto reaparecía como Justo Francisco Juan. Dicen que vieron pasar a Farabundo Martí, por Izalco, Guayúa y León, por Sonsonate y Quiché, por Nicaragua y El Salvador, por Guatemala pasó, con su luz de liberación Farabundo llegó. Con machetes y pistolas, con revólver y escopetas, obreros y campesinos en los montes y las calles. Fue en enero 32 que el pueblo les dijo basta y se encendió el corazón en contra de aquella casa. Cuentan que entonces rugió la tierra en inmenso grito, que el volcán estremeció con su furia el infinito. Sembró de muertes la tarde el ejército enemigo, con sus cobardes metrallas dio muerte a hombres y niños. 30,000 los que cayeron, obreros y campesinos, ninguno de ellos ha muerto y volverán al camino. Con Farabundo Martí, nuestra patria fusilada, volverá un amanecer, la victoria está cercana. Dicen que vieron pasar a Farabundo Martí, por Izalco, Guayúa y León, por Sonsonate y Quiché, por Nicaragua y El Salvador, por Guatemala pasó. Vieron pasar.
All right, and we're back on Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. Tomas and Jennifer are going to read about the principles of unity for the Watsonville Brown Berets.
The first stuff I want to start with, or the first principle I want to start with, is our message of nonviolence. Unlike the Brown Berets of the 1960s, who abided by the philosophy by any means necessary, we have changed that around with our modern Brown Beret chapter, and we incorporated the message of Cesar Chavez and Martin Luther King. Believe that the way to achieve social improvement and social justice is by nonviolent means. So our message is nonviolence, because violence is one of the major factors that is hurting and hindering raza progress. Young raza are killing and hurting and hating each other over senseless reasons, and we must try to end this madness that is destroying young life and talent.
The Brown Berets promote and believe in education, and culture and political awareness. It's actually built into our meetings. We spend 30 to 45 minutes of every meeting where a member who's volunteered the previous week brings some knowledge and breaks it down for the group. We've talked about and learned about everything from the 10-point program of the Black Panthers to Cesar Chavez to Cuba and current situation in Cuba. We're just trying to educate ourselves, make ourselves more aware of what's going on. Brown Berets also promote cultural and political awareness, and we do that by direct experience. We're very, very, very involved at the White Hawk Circle. We take our kids to sweats whenever they want to go, to TP ceremonies. We use the peyote medicine with our youth if they care to. We try and get them involved and support them being involved in danza and Aztec dance. And then the political awareness just comes from being involved in the community, and we support them and teach them not to be afraid to use their voice. If they feel like they need to speak, need to be heard, then we're going to support them in that and not be afraid of the consequences for exercising your rights. And that is stuff that the Brown Berets promote.
But along with that, when you just talked on spirituality, it's very important. And I think this is one of the things the Brown Berets lacked in the past. Is, you know, they didn't have anything to strengthen themselves personally. That spiritual strength that we all need, because we are faced with a lot of obstacles. And sometimes, you know, those obstacles will bring us down, you know, and disrupt our lives. And this affects our organizing, right? You know, or keeping our groups together. So our spirituality is what we bring now into the Brown Berets circles. And we do this by, you know, reliving our traditions and our dances and our ceremonies and our prayers, you know, and we teach the value of our connection to the earth, you know, our Mother Earth and our spiritual realm. So, yeah, definitely we take our young people to the sweat ceremonies and the teocalli ceremonies and teach them about their Nahuatl Mexica culture. Also, I just wanted to let you know that the Brown Berets membership is open to everybody. A membership consists only of showing dedication to the struggle, of being consistent at our meetings and our events, and a willingness to be open-minded, to do something different, you know, and to get involved and not be afraid of the consequences that come around from organizing or become active. There's a lot of issues to work on in Watsonville, and not only in Watsonville, but abroad. You know, we organize with youth and people all over the state from different communities, from different organizations. You know, we try to keep it really broad out there, you know, because only unity is going to reach liberation. You know, we can't do anything by ourselves. We need to network with different people out there. So this is a call to activism. This is a call to the activists out there to start uniting with us, to unite in the struggle. We together can make some positive changes in this community. And once again, the phone number is 429-1931. Once again, 429-1931. Or you can also email us at talejo@msn.com. That's talejo3@msn.com. Thank you. Mexica Tiawi.
Arato.
Ya basta.